This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 345 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we have no interview for you. I apologise. My schedule has been a little bit hectic these last few days and will continue to be so for the next few days. That's why Monday's episode was released a little bit late in the day for me. And the rest of the week is a little bit up and down. So there's no interview today, but there will be one next week. Got loads of interviews in the diary all scheduled in. So you can look forward to those in future Wednesdays. And Friday, we will be giving away the How to Grow Practically Everything RHS book, which is a huge book. It's absolutely fantastic, and it does exactly what it says on the tin. It's got so much information in there, and that will be given away to a patron in our Friday patrons draw. So today is going to be an oddments episode where I get caught up on all the little bits and bobs that don't necessarily warrant an episode all of their own, but lots of things that I would like to share with you. And the first thing is a little bit of an update, a chicken update. So a couple of weeks ago, I had Karen Todd on the podcast for an interview, and we were discussing her chickens. Karen had said how she basically rehomed her neighbour's chickens, brought them to her property and released them from next door. The property was next door where they were, released them to free range, and they immediately went home to roost to their old house. And you might recall we had a conversation, and I said that if they've lived on your property for a little while now, which they had, then I'd be very, very surprised if that happened again. And I can report that Karen has got back in touch, and I was right. She released them to free range on her property again, and they went back to their new home, their new bed that evening. Because the thing is with chickens is they impregnate where their home is almost straight away. Whenever we've moved chickens around, as I said on the episode, whether we're moving them a few metres or 100 metres, if we move them and then the following day we, you know, let them free range, they will tend to try and go back to where they came from, or especially the same day. Whereas once they've had two or three nights in their new dwelling, that gets impregnated on their little brains. That's where home is. And they tend to have pretty high fidelity to that once they've been there a few days. And that seemed to be the case with Karen's chickens. So that's some good news. And I didn't embarrass myself and have Karen emailing me to say she was going back over to her neighbour's property to collect them again. So that worked out really well. And I'm going to be doing an episode probably on Friday. As I've mentioned, my schedule's a little bit hectic, so we'll see. But hopefully on Friday, we will be doing an episode all about chicken husbandry and some of the finer details of chicken keeping, things like that, things about how to clip your chicken's wings, different types of feed, all of those types of things for chickens. So that is in an upcoming episode, hopefully Friday, but certainly in the next week or so. Right, next I wanted to share a little bit of listener feedback, and it sparked a bit of a conversation that I thought was worth sharing with you. So it's an email I've received from Simone Wilson. Hi, Simone. Thank you for getting in touch. A recent patron. And she writes, thank you for the mention on the podcast. It was somewhat unexpected and strange hearing my name on a podcast. I'm kind of a quiet achiever behind the scenes soul. It's funny how people's paths cross. I came upon you last year when I was doing a YouTube roam looking for tips on growing walking onions, and there you were. So I'm wondering if you might be able to point me in the direction of information around propagation. Now, Simone, I believe, lives in Australia, which will be important to give context to some of the following information. When COVID hit, it was kind of a wake-up or shake-up I needed to explore taking our garden efforts to the next level. Being based in a small town in rural Australia, seedlings became scarce. People panic-shopped, and seedling deliveries that would have lasted a week at the local nursery were gone by lunch that day. So I'm focusing on more perennials and propagation. Our climate is interesting. We get down to overnights of -5 in the winter and highs of 48 in the summer. A hothouse was tossed around as an idea, but deemed not to be the best use of money. So I've taken the last 12 to 18 months trying to fine-tune the use of indoor grow lamps to propagate. I've had some roaring successes. Last summer was really good, and I only bought chili and eggplant seedlings. Starting winter veg seems to be a little more temperamental. We're still 30 degrees plus in March and 15 degrees in April, with frosts looming around the corner. Have you come across anyone else in your travels that might share their propagation journey and experience? In gratitude, Simone. Well, thank you ever so much for your email, Simone. So the first thing I'm going to do is just answer your question very, very directly. And obviously, I have limited experience with the sort of climate you're in with regards to propagation and things. I do have some things to say on some of the wider points you raise, which I'll get to. But one of the YouTube channels my wife really, really likes is Roots and Refuge Farm. And the lady there, Jess, is a great teacher. They've just moved to a huge operation, so it's kind of changing a bit now, but some of their older videos, they were based very much in a warmer climate, and they used to struggle with some of their, you know, winter veg, just like we might suffer here in the UK with the summer veg that you guys can grow, we can't grow. So it's well worth checking out that channel. I think that's the best bit of signposting I can do. But when it comes to some of the other things you raise, I did want to just expand on them a little bit. And you said that, you know, that there's been periods over the last little while when you've struggled to get seedlings. And I've had my experience of that this year. Just this year, we've noticed seedlings were really hard to get hold to at some of the usual places that we went. Not all of them. The garden centre still had them, most of them, when I went. But our local nursery didn't have any. So there is definitely a bit of a start-stop blockage type affair in the supply chains. And I think this is just a wider point that's well worth thinking about. And just anything we can do at this point in time to mitigate our reliance upon the sort of as you need it supply chain mechanics, anything that we kind of leave to the last minute to get hold of and just assume it's going to be there, I think we should do everything we can to try and mitigate our exposure to that. And what you're doing by concentrating on perennials and propagating yourself, I think is a huge step towards that. So bravo, my hat is off to you. And I think we can all take steps in that direction. And that's something I definitely think I'll be doing an episode on in the near future. So moving on, I want to say a little mini report on urban homesteading since we've moved. And we moved, I don't know, you guys probably know better than I do, because it's all a bit of a blur to me, but I think between three and four weeks ago, something like that. And I have to say, urban homesteading is fun. I'm so enjoying it. I'm enjoying myself so much in our little house with our little garden. At the moment, I've got milk kefir cheese hanging in a cheesecloth in the fridge. I've got bacon curing in the fridge. We're making water kefir and kombucha. That's all happening downstairs as I speak to you. I've got homemade sauerkraut in the fridge. We've got seeds that we've sown growing into seedlings in the polytunnel, tomatoes that are in flower in the polytunnel. We've got our brassica cage, and just the journey has been fantastic, and I'm so enjoying myself. I really, really am. So that's the big takeaway, the overarching view on where I am at the moment. And there's so much that we can all be doing. And I think I'm going to start a Monday series about small scale farming, small scale permaculture, small scale growing, small scale kitchen work, you know, all the things that you can do regardless of what size you've got. I think that's going to be my next Monday series, because I'm just all in on it. I'm really, really into it. And everything has just been fantastic. It's been a fantastic chance for me to learn and hone new skills. I really am enjoying it, genuinely. So even the foraging here has just been amazing. I've got growing within a few steps of my front door. I've got three-cornered leek, which is one of my favourite wild forageables. It's like a spring onion that just grows wild all the year round. And it's really, really easy. Not all year round, sorry. But it's all parts of the plant you can just use as a spring onion. And it's an absolutely fantastic plant. We've got hogweed. We've got wild chervil. All of these things growing within a few footsteps of our front garden. And also magnolia trees and elder. And then we don't have to go very far. I don't even need to leave the village. And we've got walnut trees, sweet chestnut trees, cherry trees. It's just been fantastic. And we're making the most of all of them. We served hogweed as part of our roast dinner at the weekend. That was great. And yeah, I really am plugging in and starting to, I suppose, rediscover everything that's here in these surroundings. Because if you've been listening to me and watching my YouTube for a little while, you'll already know that this is a house we lived in for over a decade before we moved to our last property. So it really is coming back, but coming back with a completely new mindset, like having a completely different set of eyes. And the work we've done on the house has transformed it as well. So it does feel like a new house. Another interesting thing that's dawned on me a little bit is our sort of story on this house is really quite long. And this is the first house that my wife and I moved into as a couple. So when I first met my wife, I moved into a small house that she had that came with her job. And we lived there for a year or two. And then this house that we're living in now, it was the first house that we moved into together. We rented it, and we rented it for a long, long time, I think around a decade, before we bought it. And having lived in it for such a long time, we kind of had an unspoken deal with our landlords, which was that they never put the rent up. They never put the rent up in 10 years. And in return, we never asked them to do anything. We never asked them to repair anything or do any of the work on the house. We kind of just did it ourselves. Now, we didn't spend any money on it. You know, we kind of just bodged things as they broke and made sure that everything was kept together. Nothing was falling apart. And what that meant was when we took it over, we never had that moment that people get when they buy their first house of, here's the keys. We were already living in it. So it was all just a paperwork process. So we never had that moment of sort of taking a breath, taking a step back and thinking, right, what should we do to the house? We were already living in it. We were already maintaining it. Those two things are critical, I think, to our mindset. So when we moved out and then came back, we, for the first time, had that moment of taking a step back, taking a deep breath and saying, right, what can we change? What should we do? What's our vision of this house, what it could be? And I think, you know, that's been such a gift that we didn't have that the first time, because our view is very different now. The people we are and the way we live is very different now. So it's just everything has been so serendipitous to have worked out the way it has. We're just incredibly grateful, and we're turning this house and the garden and everything into our absolute, our vision of perfection for a plot this size. That hasn't changed anything about our long-term goals and our long-term thoughts, but it means that we're just so happy within this space. It's unbelievable. So, as you may know, if you follow my YouTube channel, we've got a big brassica cage set up now. One of our polytunnels has become a brassica cage. We've netted that with butterfly netting. So our brassicas in there are doing really, really well. And such a stark difference between those and the ones that were outside. Now, our plan, our sort of medium-term plan, our this year plan, is that that's our space for brassicas. It's big enough, I think. And the brassicas we planted outside are just because we had surplus. We had too many of them when we got back from the garden centre, so they went outside. But it's been a great way of sort of really driving home the difference between having them netted and not, because the difference in the plants and how well they're doing is really quite stark. And I think, because it's a new bed, I think it's predominantly down to pigeons at the moment. I haven't seen much evidence of slugs, and there's no damage to the brassicas in the cage is kind of how I'm basing that. I imagine if the slugs were anywhere, they'd be everywhere, whereas the pigeons only have access to the outside. So we're seeing huge amount of pest damage to the brassicas that are outside that cage, and almost none at all to the brassicas inside that cage. So I'm so happy I've done it. And that's the first lesson that I'm really trying to learn in the garden, is about protecting all of my crops from pests. We've lost most of our beetroot, I think due to cutworms. And I've had one of you guys get in touch with some great advice on that. So thank you very, very much. I will get back to you when I get a chance, as always. But yeah, I've had a lot of damage to our beetroot. So we've got a load more beetroots that we've sown. It's still very early in the season. We can still get beetroot sowings in for a little while yet. So I'm not worried about that. It would have been nice to have got that early crop from our shop-bought seedlings. But nevertheless, we are where we are. But I'm not sure. I think we'll probably end up growing them in a raised bed somewhere to try and mitigate whatever damage is happening from the location we've got them in our main bed. But we'll see. And going forwards, I'm just waiting to have our fence done now. I've got a friend coming to help me with that. We're tying all that in with me getting some help and me being able to afford it. But once we've done the other fence on the other side of the garden, we're going to be able to double or even triple our growing space. And that then is going to be a game changer. So that made all of these things have made me think about my September challenge this year. And I really am not sure what parameters I'm going to set myself. I don't think I'm going to be able to do the same challenge to the same degree as I did last year. And that is because of one simple reason. I haven't had enough growing space to grow any potatoes. I don't have any potatoes in the ground yet. I could have got some in containers. I know that. I could have got a handful, but not enough, I don't think. And that one crop, it goes to show how important that one crop can be to us. And maybe, I suppose, I'll throw the gauntlet down to you guys. Perhaps you can come up with a challenge idea for this September that is going to be a challenge for me, but something that is doable, something that's not impossible as to what my September challenge this year can be. One of the things I'm toying with is the idea of maybe I will give myself £20 to spend on food for the month. So that has to cover me for the whole month. That's one of the ideas I'm toying with. And yeah, if you've got any others, please do get in touch. selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. And let me know if you've got any ideas for what sort of challenge I can set myself for September. I'd absolutely love to hear them from you. Speaking of providing our own food, I want to talk about protein just quickly. I'm going to do a whole episode on protein and wild game and things. Again, that's coming up in the near future. But in the meantime, I'm thinking of using my little air rifle to maybe create some pigeon protein and protect my brassicas at the same time. So that might be something that I look into a little bit more. And then I suppose just a quick roundup of what I've got going on downstairs in the kitchen. As I've mentioned already, I'm making milk kefir cheese. I'm kind of perfecting that. I've had the beauty of milk kefir and making cheese with it is the whole process takes hardly any time at all. You can turn everything around in a couple of days and all you need is some milk. Really, really simple. It can be really, really cheap. And I'm really enjoying that process. And as I perfect it, I'm going to obviously come back and update you guys. The same applies with some bacon curing that I'm doing. I'm actually using a shop-bought packet, a bacon cure pack, if you like, that was given to me as a gift for a Christmas present. And I'm just doing a bit of a review on that. I'm filming that process and I'll put that up on the YouTube channel because it is something everyone can do at home. And, you know, I'm going to see how it compares to my just regular methods of curing bacon, which are a little bit simpler, I have to say. The water kefir, what I'm doing at the moment, because I haven't got the time to focus on all of these things at once. My focus is on the milk kefir at the moment. So with the water kefir, I'm still making it, but I'm not really perfecting it. I'm doing a lot of it with the kefir in the fridge to slow it down. So I'm not constantly making more and more and more before I've had a chance to really get to grips with it and how I want it. Sauerkraut, that's going really well. I'm making that semi-regularly now because I'm eating it fairly regularly. So I think one jar probably lasts me, 2 weeks. And it's about a 3 or 4 week process for me to get it just right. So I'm making a couple of jars every month. And we've also done our first round of sowing. We've got our seeds in and seedlings coming up in the polytunnel, and that just feels great. It really does feel great. I'm kind of getting everything up and running. One of the downsides of moving for anyone is that we've got a lot of systems that aren't quite right yet. Simple things like where things are laid out in our kitchen cupboards. But not just the simple things, also our composting system, our food scrap system. You know, a lot of these things are not up together yet. I've mentioned before I want to start building some worm towers of my own in the garden, and that's going to deal with a lot of our composting needs and our kitchen scraps and all those kind of things. But at the moment we're managing, actually. We haven't thrown out any kitchen scraps. We haven't thrown out into the recycling any food waste. It's all going to the chickens at the moment. We're managing that quite carefully. Sometimes we're having to put food scraps in the freezer. Sometimes we're just putting them in the fridge, but we're managing it. You know, when we do have a glut of food scraps, for instance, at the weekend when I cooked a large roast dinner, we create quite a lot of potato peelings and things like that. And, you know, dealing with all of those in one day isn't always practical for the number of hens that we now keep. But we've got plans for all of these things. So the future looks bright. So I will end just by reiterating what I've already said and how happy I am to be doing what I'm doing. And I wouldn't change a thing. So if you're in a smaller space, please don't let it hold you back. Embrace what you can do. Embrace what you have. And you don't even have to be limited. There's so much. There's so much we can be doing and enjoying. And it's spring. It's almost summer, you know, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere. And what a great time to be a homesteader.
Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters.